Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. On a way to our conversation, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's Maryland foreclosure settlement. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or at 877-462-7555. We're going to have a roundtable here in the last part of our program about local issues, specifically one we'll start with. Jason Rodriguez is in the studio. He's editing and technical manager for DMVDaily.com, one of the founders of the Baltimore City chapter of Cop Watch. Jason, good to have you in the studio.
Nice to be here.
Julius Colon is with us, president and CEO of the Park Heights Renaissance. Julius, good to have you back.
Thank you.
Dr. John Bullock is with us in the studio, professor of political science at Towson University, John, and sometime city council candidate. Maybe again, we don't know, we'll see. Good to have you back here.
Hey, great to be here, thanks.
410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow at gmail.com. Log on to Facebook. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Let's begin with the issue of the article that came out in the yesterday's Sun about police. And they say we need more police because we have so many of them that are on leave. They've been either put on leave or they're on leave because they're sick, that we have vacancies, something 240 vacancies that they have to be filled. Baltimore now also has, if you look at the stats, the third highest ratio of police to citizens in the entire country. Only Washington and Newark have more per capita. I mean, New York has far less per capita than Baltimore City does. And both two of our gentlemen in the studio know New York. And so... being transplants, but so do we? So what is that? What about that issue? I mean, this is critical. The mayor's pushing it. Commissioner Batts is pushing it. That we need more police because of this rise in crime. They're saying we need police because of this new story about arsonists who are throwing bombs in people's homes. Your thoughts?
Well, I can appreciate the fiscal challenges, right? I mean, we know that the budget has been, you know, exceeded in numerous years. We know that crime's an issue. But I can also submit that we're looking at it possibly a little bit backward in the sense that it's not the police necessarily that control or at least are the cause or control of crime or what have you. These are largely community issues, and we're not really going to be able to police ourselves out of it. It's definitely important for us to have adequate police coverage, particularly in high crime areas. But at the same time, it's not the be-all, end-all. And we can look at other jurisdictions that have a smaller or lower ratio of police to citizens. And it kind of gives you an idea of what we could possibly be doing.
Yeah, Mark, I don't buy that the whole argument about, you know, that we have that ratio argument about that we have more police per capita and so forth. Because the whole issue of how many people go on leave, how many people are available to work one given shift. For example, in the Northwest District, at one time, to cover that whole district, you may have 14, 16 police out on patrol, covering that whole area. And to me, that's a farce, you know, really, when you think about it, because you have people, normally they have like, they're supposed to have like 20 plus, but there are people that are on vacation, there are people that are suspended, there's all kind of issues that exist. And there is some issues with respect to, I believe, with respect to the whole issue of how you address that within the union, the police union, and so forth. But when we talk about having more police presence in the community, we need more police presence in the community. I will tell you that with the kind of crime that we have in our communities, we need more police presence. But we also need alternatives. Mm-hmm. And some of the alternatives that we're undertaking in Park Heights is this whole issue of having the Safe Streets program in Park Heights. And that's having an impact in our community. But that argument about this per capita ratio, I don't buy it. I don't buy it.
Jason.
I mean, you're saying we need more police presence, but I don't think we're necessarily managing the force that we have now, and we really need to question that workforce management, whether or not we're using proper technology, some of the new tools of the trade, whether or not our officers are properly trained to be able to properly police our neighborhoods. You know, we have a problem also with keeping officers. According to Justin Fenton's article, he's saying that more than one officer was leaving the agency per month in May. You know, we have a retainment issue, so we're not keeping officers. And I remember last year we had a huge group of leadership leave the police force, majors and sergeants and lieutenants that left the force, some out of protest because of the new command that was coming into the department. You know, we have a problem with retainment. If we can hire 100 more officers, but if we're losing hundreds of officers per month, you know, we're never going to sustain those levels. So we need to also look at that, keeping our officers as well, because we're not doing a good job with that.
Yeah, I think you make a good point. And I think that you're right. There are certain issues that have been coming up. I know when they talked about this whole issue about the pension funds, that there were officers that were saying, well, I can go to Baltimore County or I can go to another county and get the kind of resources and the salaries that I need. So we're losing them. That's correct. And we need to retain those that are knowledgeable. But also we need to improve some of the leadership that we have among our police force as well. And there needs to be more the concept of community policing. That doesn't exist, I mean, to a great extent. I mean, what happened to community policing? What happened to the police officer on the street showing the physical presence to the community? And I think that's necessary.
Exactly. And I think one of the things that both of you are referencing is really the deployment issues. So are we effectively using our resources? Oftentimes we have to look at, you know, do an in-house audit and see how we're effectively, if we're using our resources effectively. You mentioned, community policing. Again, that speaks back to not only how officers deal with the community, but also how the community deals with itself. And I know that, Commissioner Batts comes in with, that background in terms of community policing. I think that's something that he's bringing to the table. But in terms of the recruitment and retention, the interesting thing that the article really points out is that we're able to recruit at the same level. I mean, the base salary for an officer is usually about the same, but it's once they get to a sergeant and they start to get to these other higher levels that the pay is not commensurate with other jurisdictions.
I question those levels because of the fact what type of quality of candidate are we bringing in, because that's what most of the senior leadership is complaining about and why they're leaving in Groves is because of the lack of good quality candidates, because we don't have an attractive benefits package, because we don't have attractive wages and other perks involved in our benefits package. You know, we're getting kind of the last of the folks that are looking to get into law enforcement, which may not necessarily always be those of high standard. We're taking what's ever left to try to fill our roles. So I would question that recruitment, the quality of it.
Let me go to the phone, see what our listeners are thinking. At 410-319-8888, do we need more police? Or do we have enough in our town already? Is it just deployment? Is it issues that Jason was raising about training and who we attract? 410-319-8888. And how does that fit in your neighborhood? Ernest, on the west side of town, you're on the air. Hi, Ernest, you're on the air.
Hello?
You're on the air, Ernest.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good, man.
One of your guests and colleagues said that at one time they only had 14 police officers in the Northwest the whole time I was there. I worked in the Northwest and many other districts. That has never been the case. Never been at 14 police. You had three sectors and three sectors of police plus operations plus the two cruisers. And each sector had, the northwest part of it had 637 was a car, and also 638 patrolled Reisterstown Road alone. So you had 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36, 37. Now that's never been the case. So I don't know how you got. Plus you had a lieutenant and three sergeants.
So let me hold on a second. Let's come back real quick before we go to another caller. It was Julius Colonna said that. Julius
right. What I was pointing out was that at sometimes when giving in a shift, that you go ahead and because of vacations, because of suspensions, because of those type of different issues, At sometimes there could be just 14 people working a shift. Now you have different types of units. I know you have different types of units. You have the undercover unit, and I'm talking specifically to the uniformed police officers that ride around on the vehicles. So I have asked that question at times? Why is it that we are not able to cover as much of the district as needed? And at times I've been told that, you know, certain people are on vacation and suspensions and so on and so forth. So that's been the kind of response that we received. But there are usually more in the undercover police as well, but they're not shown. They're not seen into the community.
We have a lot of callers, Ernest. I'll let you have one quick thought because we have a ton of callers here, but go ahead.
That information is absolutely wrong, Mark, and he shouldn't be allowed to put that out. I mean, even when they are short police, the minimum they have to have enough to cover each district area. They have to have that. You can't get off if you don't have that. Now, and hello.
Go ahead, man. Finish your thought.
And even I don't know. You familiar with the Northwest Citizen Patrol?
Yes. Yes.
When they had the Northwest Citizen Patrol up there, they had a special officer, two officers detailed to the Northwest Citizen Patrol, plus a footman would leave Mondominal, wherever he was on, or Reisterstown Road Plaza, and go up there and ride around in a car. So that is never the information that he's given. I don't know where he got it from. But it's absolutely false. And
Well, Ernest, I know that I was at a Commissioner Batt's confirmation hearing, and I remember that Councilman Brandon Scott was also saying at that time that there was a problem in the Northwest, and that there was these huge absences, and he was asking the police department about these huge absences that were in that particular district. So I know there is a problem in that district, and there's been a problem for quite some time in that district with absenteeism, suspensions, officers that are still on the payroll. This was pointed out by Brandon Scott. This is not me saying this. Officers that are still on the payroll, that are still getting paid, but are not out on shift doing any rounds.
If they have a call in the Northwest and all the units are out on a homicide or a fire or something like that, they send officers from the Western, the Northern, any other district that's available, tactical. They don't just depend on what you are saying, that officers in the Northwest.
I'm willing
when
to.
When I was in the Northwest, I responded to calls down in the Central.
I'm available to discuss this further and debate the issue with you further outside of this this program, so that I can qualify my statement with you.
Ernest, I always appreciate you being on the air because you bring us knowledge about policing that few do. Let's go to the caller here, 410-319-8888. TW in Baltimore, you're on the air. TW there?
Yes, good morning.
Could you turn down your radio?
Yes,
you go.
Good morning.
I
just wanted to make a comment
sure.
in reference to whether Baltimore City needs more police officers. I think the more the merrier, but I look at it in the three R's: recruit, retain, and respect. When we talk about the community police officers, I'm 56 years old, and yes, we had community police officers in the Cherry Hill area. Vision is very important, but I think the citizens in Baltimore want it both ways, because when we populate a community with police officers, people want to cry abuse. They're harassing us. They're stopping us unnecessarily. And then I look at the system that the police officers are placed in. When you talk about retention, I can't say that it's based on salary and benefits, but I can say that when they're trying to do their job, the time they finish the paperwork that's required, especially for juveniles, when they submit that paperwork, that juvenile is waving bye-bye to them. So we have to look at what we're doing. It's not so much about putting more in, but what are we getting out? You're arresting folks, and before you finish your paperwork, they're released. So I think the turnover rate has to do with the court system. It's deeper than seeing more police officers in a community. Thank you.
Thank you so much, W.
I think the caller makes an excellent point. This is really what I was sort of starting with, in that, you know, people, you know, really can't have it both ways if we're really going to be honest, right? So on one hand, we'll say there's not enough police and these are high crime areas, and then sometimes there's too many police and there's high arrest. I live in the Western District. I was actually passing by a corner yesterday and saw three officers on foot on the corner. So we're seeing, you know, that being beefed up. But we also have to know that we as Baltimoreans, we as city residents have to do the work, right? So, again, it's not always the police. It's about what are we going to do to address these issues. The other part of it as well, when we think about some of these police officers who are going to other jurisdictions, we have to also be honest and realize that it's also attractive for many of them because they live in other jurisdictions as it is. And some of those issues in terms of where people take their money, where they take their their income, that affects our tax base. So, again, a lot of the reason why we have the problems we have are not necessarily based upon whether the police are there or not. We're talking about struggling communities. We're talking about disinvestment. And some of the things that, that Julian mentioned in terms of what's happening at Park Heights, I mean, the Safe Streets program is a great example of how we're using resources to actually deal with the root causes of the problem, talking about the gun violence, talking about the social structures that give rise to some of these issues. So we have to look at it from a multiplicity of levels.
Yeah, Mark, I agree, because you need wraparound services, like he was saying. If you don't have those wraparound services like Safe Streets, you know, like the community organizations and the police working in the community, you're not going to solve the problem. So you have to have those wraparound services. It's not just a police issue.
So you know, we have all these other issues that kind of flow into this. The Sun reported how, for some reason, Maryland has this exorbitant rate of unreported gun losses, stolen guns from shops and more, that feed into violence in our communities. And the city paper had a really interesting piece just about the developers and money and non-payment of taxes, because then they have payment in lieu of taxes and more, and how much that also feeds into the how we pay or don't pay for what's in the city. I mean, so these all feed into each other in many ways. Mm-hmm. Yes. These are not isolated issues.
Yes.
I mean, when you look at the housing stock that's abandoned in the city of Baltimore, there is more privately owned abandoned housing stock than there is actually city-owned abandoned housing stock. So the whole issue of where we have to, you know, direct certain resources, when you talk about trying to eliminate some of that abandonment, the city has to proceed in trying to acquire those privately owned properties, and that's a whole other process. But again, you know, that affects the tax base, that affects, you know, the impact that we have with respect to resources and the whole budget issue that we have in the city of Baltimore. I mean, again, you know, how do we address, you know, the abandonment issue? I mean, when we talk about where some of the crime exists, mm-hmm. you know, when you talk about, it, individuals, criminals are actually entering these properties and acquiring these properties, squatting these properties and selling drugs and doing things of that nature. So, again, you know, it's a larger problem than just the issue of policing. When my colleague was talking about, you know, that as a community, how we need to come out of our doors and come out of our fences, you know, the level of apathy that exists, you know, because of the crime and how we are trying to protect our children today, the community has to elevate itself out of that and come out of it and say, you know, we got to take our communities back, you know. Anyway.
I'm kind of on the fence on this one here, because when you have the only multi-million-dollar industry still left in Baltimore City is the drug industry, and you don't have any jobs, and you have failing schools, and you're closing up recreational centers, and you don't have these support systems for the youth to have pathways in our community, you're not encouraging them to do right in the neighborhood. You know, this concrete jungle has cracks in it, and unfortunately, those who are walking on it fall through the cracks many a times in this city. You know, so we have to figure out how to create real jobs within our community and to create real pathways in our community. Because like I said, the last industry that's in this city right now, multi-million-dollar industry, is the drug industry. All of our Fortune 500 companies have abandoned and have left the city because of our tax structure. Right. No one is creating jobs, real jobs in this city. You know, I give kudos to companies like Under Armour who are trying to make an investment in the city, and they're still dealing with a lot of challenges within this city, but it's a start. But we need more companies like that are willing to make an investment. We need to change our tax structure so that it's better to those who come into our community. It's more profitable for those to come into our community and invest in our community instead of investing in certain places like Harbor East, Harbor Middle. You know.
Well, I agree with you that jobs is an issue.
So let me ask this question. And I wonder what our listeners may have some ideas about this at 410-319-8888. So whenever we have these conversations, this comes up again, where we've come to, no matter where we begin. So what does that mean? I mean, in terms of what the solutions are, you see what people say our city budget is. You see what the limits people say that we have in city budgets. So what do you do differently that does the things we're talking about? You know, and we know the abandoned houses are there. We're about to have a series of programs on housing in Baltimore because we've asked people to give us different scenarios about what it would cost to change the housing in Baltimore. They're very different. We're going to figure out where the truth lies, but in terms of cost. But so, you know, you run for office, Dr. Bullock. what can be done differently?
You know, I think there are a couple things. I'll say, you know, first, you know, you can't take economic development off the table, right? So, again, you know, not that any of us are bashing the harbor. I think, you know, it's definitely economic engine for the city and some of the, you know, development around there in terms of commercial development, business development, that's important. We can also have the argument that sometimes we may give away too much in terms of taxes or tax breaks. So that's a conversation we can have. But also we have to look at really the education system, look at the job structure. So we may say, yes, we're creating jobs, but what kind of jobs? And really in Baltimore and cities like it, we have a two-tier job structure. We have those high income, highly educated white collar jobs. Then we have lower level service jobs that don't oftentimes pay a decent living wage. They don't provide any benefits. And so you have people who are the working poor who oftentimes live in communities, still don't have enough, you know, to put on the table. And then they wind up in, you know, positions that don't really grow as well. So I think we have to, you know, look at the living wage. I think that's an important piece of it. I think it's also providing those opportunities for recreation, you know, for educational opportunities that would give people the chance to break out of some of those dead-end jobs that could compete for those jobs that are being created in larger numbers.
But,
in the city.
But it's ludicrous that we're not taking advantage of what we have right here. This is we have John Hopkins, we have University of Maryland. This should be a science, technology, engineering, math city. You know, there's nothing wrong with these folks that are sitting on their porches, just sitting there, just letting life take the best of them. You know, they can be scientists. They can be they can get into technology. They can be engineers. They can be mathematicians. Mm-hmm. As I was growing up in the neighborhood, I know some drug dealers mm-hmm. that know math and science and chemistry down to, you know, a science here. You know, so they're just utilizing it in the wrong way. We need to learn how to capture these folks out of these communities and show them the path into these resources that are already here.
And capture them before they get into the criminal justice system. So we talk
Correct.
About, you know, police and arrests. When people get these, you know, felonies and these arrest records at an early age, it locks them out of education. They can't get financial aid to go to college.
Correct.
And once they're locked out of education, you can't compete for those jobs at Hopkins, University of Maryland, all those
you
other places.
You can't even get a CDL to drive a truck if you have a
so,
felony.
Let me go back to the phones here. 410-319-8888. Tyrone, you're on the air. Hi, Tyrone. Welcome. You're on the air. Tyrone, you there?
Yeah, how you doing?
You're on the air. There you go.
I was trying to figure out and trying to understand why I was reading in the Afro paper in reference to our mayor and what $500,000 or $500 million for the contractors and for her to hire 51% of the residents of Baltimore for those contracts or to get hired for those jobs, and why she would not okay that or sign for that. And I think another thing is that the reason why our crime rate probably is so high or so much problem in the community is because we're not investing the money into the black communities or the community to help to cut down on the crime or do anything for the people to help them cut down on the crime. All the money that they just, I was hearing on the news about the casinos, $50 million for this month that they brought in?
Yeah.
What are they going to do with all that money? Is they going to do anything to invest into our communities to help bring us up out of the poverty or the insanity that we're going through in our communities? Go ahead, you can respond to that. I'll listen.
No, Tyrone, that's a great question. Let's take your question backwards. Mm-hmm. In terms of the $50 million from our casinos, and where do we spend the money in the city? Mm-hmm. Do we put that in hiring more police? What's the priority? Or is it going after neighbors, figuring out how to rehab houses? Or is it in our rec centers? I mean, what do you do? You're in the city council. You're doing the debates. What are you going to do?
Well, some of those funds, the slots funds, what they call the lottery funds, some of it is coming to Park Heights, and it's going towards capital development and human services. So some of the funds are being – we're the only community in the city of Baltimore that is now will be receiving slots funds. At this present time, when the casino is built downtown on Russell Street, that surrounding community will be receiving slots funding as well. And the way the legislation is written, it's written towards capital improvement. And the kind of stuff that we're doing in the Park Heights community is – you know, improving the issues with respect to recreation centers, putting some of the money towards that, putting some money towards eliminating some of the blight, some of the creating, subsidizing some rehabilitation of the housing out there, some infrastructure improvements. So there is a host of activities going on that the slots funds, which is very transparent with respect to this year's allocation and the 1 mile radius around Park Heights, because $6 million is coming to that, the Park Heights master plan area and the 1 mile radius, and that's being utilized for different physical and human services activities.
I believe there's some money also as well supposed to be going to the Westport community as well, and, okay. and the same, I believe, ideas are supposed to be implemented in that area as well, infrastructure, sidewalks, mm-hmm. signaling improvements.
But on some levels, don't we need, and we only have like a, how much time we have left? Let me look at my little producer notes. Not much, 1 minute. So we don't have much time for anything. So I just want to thank all of you for being here. And I just, because where we'll lead off next time is, don't we kind of need more of a larger master plan, not just divided, with all due respect, not just divided up by Park Heights, Westport gets this, mm-hmm. Park Heights right. gets this, but we have no plan in this city, it seems, a master plan about how we're going to develop Baltimore. Mm-hmm. It feels like a city without a plan. Mm-hmm. And my somebody's plan is called gentrification and downtown development, but where's the rest? Mm-hmm. But we'll come up right. with that next. Okay. I want to thank all three of you. Jules Colon is president and CEO of Park Heights Renaissance. Jason Rodriguez, editing and technical manager for DMVDaily.com and one of the founders of Baltimore City chapter of Copwatch. Dr. John Bullock, professor of political science at Towson University and community activist on the West Side. Good to have the three of you here.
Good to be here.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you. And reminding you on the way out the door, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, you can go to www.mecu.com. And the Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Gunnery, Bobby Marvin Holmes, and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineers, Andre Melton. Our interns, Lila Warshaw, Albert Phillips Jr., Danielle Dupree, Sinead Hawkins, and working today, Alex Rudy and Kamani Seldon. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. You can go to our website, steinershow.org, find out information about our guests, what they're doing and what they're writing and where they are. And to listen and download podcasts, please go to iTunes. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. Michelle Martin's next.